I'd like to introduce Lisa Johnson from NC State University, and she has got an interesting talk. Come on in. Join the crowd. No, seriously, come in. And she's going to be discussing crop loss with us today. So thank you, Lisa.
Thank you. I'm debating standing here neatly and not flailing my arms. I guess I should do that. I might try and walk around. Anyway, hi, I'm Lisa Johnson. I'm here from North Carolina State University. Typically, when I introduce myself, I tell people I study post-harvest loss because everybody knows what that is, and they say, yeah, okay, I get it. You know, we're going to get into some weeds on that topic here in a minute, but you can see the title of my presentation here is Field Measurement and Qualitative Inquiry Indicates Need for Reevaluation of On-Farm Food Loss Estimates in North America. So kind of a big picture topic today. If you take a look at the global data that we have on food loss, in particular in fruit and vegetable crops, you can see in all these regions across the world, we're hovering right around the 50% of our production mark. So 50% of the fruit and vegetables we produce are lost somewhere throughout the supply chain. It's kind of dramatic, right, when you think about it? If you look at the light blue bars at the bottom, they represent the portion that is estimated to be lost in agriculture. Now, the FAO estimates in the U.S., in these regions, Europe and North America, that about 20% of our production is lost in agriculture. So that is considering in the field and in the packing house. With no further information, we can assume that they mean about 10% in the field, 10% in the packing house, right? The problem with this estimate is that it came to us in the 1960s. There was a pathologist that made this estimation without really sharing how his methodology worked, and published this in the 60s, and that number has been carried forward on and on until today. It's still the number that we use today in 2018. So traditionally, the definition of post-harvest loss, according to some post-harvest greats, Adele Cater and Stan Kays, is qualitative reductions in crop volume that occur between harvest and consumption. So this is really describing a volume loss or a quality loss between harvest and consumption. There's some defined boundaries there. Well, now we've had kind of a rebranding of post-harvest loss that has occurred in the last couple years and gotten a lot more people excited about it, including me. When you consider that post-harvest loss in specialty crops is not that interesting to the general public, and then it suddenly turns into food loss and you're calling it food, suddenly a lot more people get interested. The FAO has a new definition of food loss that says a decrease in quantity or quality of food reflected in nutritional value, economic value, or food safety of all food produced for human consumption but not eaten by humans. So the boundary of post-harvest loss has been expanded to be food loss. Now we're talking about not just food that was harvested, but all food that was produced for humans, okay? So we got a little bit bigger in our definition. In conjunction, we now have a better definition of food waste. It's actually part of food loss and refers to discarding or alternative non-food use of safe and nutritious food for human consumption all along food supply chains. There's lots of definitions now of food loss and food waste. What these two definitions are not showing here is that food waste is often considered the result of a behavior or a decision, whereas food loss is considered to be more unintentional and the result of external factors. Hopefully that's intuitive to y'all. So this became pretty important even to the United States government, and in 2015 they adopted reducing food waste as a sustainable development goal, charging us with cutting food waste in half by 2030. They didn't give real guidance on how to do this, but it's getting worked out. So the question that really drove my research was had to do with that boundary expanding. What is left out there in the field when growers determine they should end the harvest? This seems a really good place to start when you want to tackle some of the goals we have. So for me, in all the crops that we have, the portion left in the field really fell into these three categories. There's a portion left that's marketable, that would meet buyer specifications, but for whatever reason is just not being harvested. Then there's a portion that's fresh and healthy and at the correct maturity that would be considered edible, but that might not meet those buyer specifications. And a portion that would be considered inedible for people that might be damaged or diseased or overmature, right? So in all the crops, these are the three categories that it sort of fell into for me. So I thought in North Carolina, we really have the perfect place to study such a cross-commodity issue. We have about 150,000 acres in vegetable production, in melons and sweet potatoes, and we're in the top 10 for a lot of these crops, for especially sweet potato, but also bell pepper, cucumber, watermelon, I think, and I think even tomato. Unfortunately, we're in the top 10 for some other things, too. We have higher than average food insecurity in North Carolina. Food loss and waste has now been called the dumbest problem in the world. It seems that for some reason, we're just not getting nutritious food to the people who need it. So I thought, well, you know, in North Carolina, we could figure this out if our starting point was how much surplus do we have? So in trying to figure this out, I did field measurement, which turned out to be one of the easiest parts of what I do, the hardest part being getting access to those fields because growers are not interested in talking about this issue. You can imagine it's kind of sensitive for them to share what they are not utilizing, right? So in North Carolina, I was able to get some grants for my work from USDA SARE, and we started an initiative at NC State called Whole Crop Harvest, and we're studying some of the more social and economic aspects of this issue, as well as what scale are we talking about. So in field measurement, I worked with 9 mixed vegetable growers and used a protocol for measurement very similar to measuring for harvest potential, taking a sample and scaling it up. Super easy, right? Just at the end of the season. So here's some of the data that I found. There's no stats to it here, just sharing a broad overview. If you take a look at the edible category, now this is the portion that wouldn't meet buyer specifications. In cabbage across the fields and farms that I measured, you can see that on average a little over 3,400 kilograms per hectare was left out there in the field. And so you think, well, you know, how could this get to people? It's clearly ready to harvest, ready to use, right? And it got tilled in. That's what happens. So just sharing a quote here from Adel Cater, one of the post-harvest greats. He knew even a long time back, even before he wrote this in 2003, that reclaiming this portion of food that we're not using is a more sustainable way to increase our food supply than trying to produce more, trying to use more land, more fertilizer, more chemical inputs. And what he said was, although minimizing post-harvest losses of already produced food is more sustainable than increasing production to compensate for these losses, less than 5% of the funding of agricultural research is allocated to post-harvest research areas. So historically, this hasn't been a real hot topic. Like I mentioned, some of this rebranding is really working in the favor of this issue. I have been well-funded in my research, and I can tell you a lot of environmental groups are very interested in this issue. Similarly, lots of industries are amping up their sustainable programs and including reducing food loss and waste in there. So if you look at some large companies like Campbell, Smucker's, Walmart, et cetera, they're all interested in reducing losses and waste. So So when you compare the numbers that I found in the field with the marketed yield, you would think there's supposed to be 10% sitting out there, right, according to the estimates we have. In comparison with the three-year average marketed yield, it's not 10% that's sitting out there in the field. Here I'm showing the marketable quantities in green bars and the edible quality in the yellow bars. This snapshot study is showing a grand mean across all of these crops of 42%. So it's really time to start reevaluating those numbers that we have that came from way back when. I do want to share with you that there's a really active food loss and waste community building in the United States and globally, and I have been to many meetings nationally. I just went to Harvard and was a panelist at the U.S. Food Waste Summit. A lot of these food loss and waste people, researchers, advocates, and such, are not versed in food production, yet they have the power and impact to make a lot of change. So it's, I think, important to reach out from horticulture and realize that what we do is also important to others. In something like this U.S. Food Waste Summit, they're really trying to move into the developing solutions for food loss and waste rather than sticking with measurement, which me as an academic, I would like to stick with measurement forever and ever, you know, but it's just not that interesting for everybody. So they want to fix it, right? So they're coming up with all these solutions. Well, not having consulted people in agricultural production, only consulting the rest of the supply chain, still there are recommendations being made in agriculture. For solutions, really improvements to the donation infrastructure and tax benefit situation is what is being promoted. I don't know if y'all work with growers as much as I do, but a donation is important to them, and often growers do it, but it's also a real challenge for them. So they don't really see that as a solution. When I did qualitative inquiry with, similarly with growers in Eastern North Carolina, commercial size growers that are operating 20% of that vegetable acreage I talked about, and these are large growers, these were mostly 100 to 1500 acre growers, what they said that they saw as solutions to reducing food loss at the farm level was very different than what is being suggested by groups such as like the EPA, who suggests reducing overplanting and increasing donation from the farm. What growers themselves suggested was that we need to be facilitating market consistency and really high prices for them. We really need more processing infrastructure and the ability to extend shelf life. They want to see increased demand for fresh produce. So, you know, no small challenge, right? We're horticulturists. We can get out there and get people to eat more produce, right? No problem. So, you know, it would be wrong of me to extrapolate North Carolina numbers to the nation or the continent. But I'm going to do it anyway because we don't have these numbers at all. Nobody's getting these numbers. We don't have them. So like I said, in agriculture, the estimate is 20%, and that's the packing house and the field. If I plug in what I have found, 42%, it really looks more like we're losing or wasting close to 90% of the production in fruit and vegetable crops, which is a terrible shame. And we can do better, and growers really need our help to do this. What is standing in the way, right? We need innovation in harvest and distribution. No problem. We can do that, right? Maybe even contracts need to be better written. So to me, that looks like we need innovation more in food systems and market structure rather than our focus continuing to remain on post-harvest technology. We've really made so many advances in the middle of the supply chain. I think we need to back up and stick with agriculture a little bit. I just want to acknowledge the fantastic team that I work with at NC State and be sure and answer any questions that you may have. Thank you so much. It's a quiet group. Nothing. Yes.
process here, that how do you think the consumers will look to your data and see that 90% of the food that they produce, extrapolating, it is being lost somehow in the chain? How do you think that?
Well, consumers get really excited about this issue, and the Natural Resources Defense Council, which is a national nonprofit, and the Ag Council in the U.S. have gotten together for a new campaign called Save the Food. And so they're really promoting, preserving food, using everything you buy, making a shopping list, things like that. So there are a lot of things that we as consumers can do to reduce waste at the consumer level. The problem with that is that we don't know how big the losses are at the agricultural level, so it could be even more important to focus there. Now, there are a lot of reasons to reduce food loss and waste that are economic reasons. It costs about 1% of our GDP to produce, transport, store, and process, and then dispose all of that food. And environmental reasons too. They're about 20% of our landfills are filled with food, creating methane, contributing to climate change. But there's a huge social reason too. We have over 40 million people who are food insecure, and so agricultural production is really, I think, the best way to solve that portion of the issue. But yeah, consumers have a big role to play in reducing what goes to the landfill.
Okay.